We've been looking at the presidential candidates' positions on education, healthcare. Today, foreign policy. The Republican incumbent, Donald Trump, says the backbone of his is power.
America is fulfilling our destiny as peacemaker, but it is peace through strength. We are stronger now than ever before. Our weapons are at an advanced level like we've never had before, like, frankly, we've never even thought of having before. And I am proudly putting America first.
His Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden, invokes power as well.
We've been most effective as a world leader, in my humble opinion, not just by the exercise of our power, the most powerful nation in the world, but the power of our example. That's what's led the rest of the world to follow us on almost everything.
Biden went on to say that the president's example is turning allies against the U.S. But President Trump has pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal, the Paris Climate Accord, made historic deals in the Middle East. What would a second term look like? How will Biden approach China, North Korea, Russia? Philip Gordon is senior fellow in U.S. foreign policy at the Council on Foreign Relations. And Philip, let's just say at the outset, President Trump doesn't list his policies. There's no health care plan or foreign policy outlined on his website. But we've had 4 years of seeing it. So how would you characterize it?
I guess I would use the president's own words, America first. He has distanced himself from a long tradition of U.S. foreign policy of engaging the rest of the world through alliances and partnerships and international institutions and respecting norms. He talked about power in the clip that you played, but it's power in a very narrow and distinct use of the word. It's, you know, spending $700 billion on the military, but not, unlike in the clip you've played from Vice President Biden, understanding power in a broader way, which includes partnerships, alliances, and respect and credibility in the world.
Well, he did pull out of the Iran agreement, as we said, the World Health Organization, angry about the way they view China and the coronavirus, the Paris Climate Accords, and he's threatened a NATO withdrawal. Any sense of what a second term would mean for NATO in the U.S.?
Well, I think all of the things that you mentioned tip Trump's hand about what he would do in the second term. The door would be open for a much more aggressive pursuit of this sort of nationalist America first policy, in the sense that even many of the things that you mentioned, he didn't get around to until well into his first term. If you remember, especially the first year, he was surrounded by what people at the time called the adults in the room. And they persuaded him not to go too aggressively down this path. And they were more traditionalists, Generals Kelly, McMaster, Secretary Tillerson. But I think over time, he's gotten rid of those more traditional advisors. He's going more with his gut. And if reelected after pursuing that policy, I think he would feel free to question even much more controversial things like U.S. membership in NATO. So far with NATO, all he has done is challenge it, criticize allies for not contributing enough to common defense, and question the core Article 5 treaty guarantee of defending allies by saying, well, that's only valid if you, as he puts it, pay your bills. In the second term, it could go all the way to the point of actually pulling out of the alliance. And, you know, that's something that National Security Advisor John Bolton specifically warned about for a second term.
One of Trump's biggest bragging points at rallies is that he authorized the assassination of a top Iranian general while that general was visiting in Iraq. Is Trump right that that made us safer?
I put that in the to be determined category. I don't think anybody in America is shedding tears over the death of Qasem Soleimani, who had a lot of American blood on his hands and, you know, wreaked havoc throughout the region and interfered in neighboring countries to Iran. But I say to be determined because it already provoked Iranian retaliation in the form of ballistic missile strikes against bases in Iraq that had Americans, you know, dozens of which had to then go to the hospital with severe injuries and could have been killed. And there have been subsequent Iranian-backed attacks on U.S. forces in Iraq, leading to the point that the Trump administration is actually considering or has threatened to close our embassy in Baghdad because it can't be secured.
What about China? Early on, the president was effusive about its leader. People thought he was naive. Then he pivoted, imposed tariffs. More recently, blames China for the coronavirus against all scientific evidence. What does a future relationship with China under President Trump look like?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tricky one, as you say, Robin, because we've seen, you know, both extremes. Trump talking about his very good friend, President Xi, and praising his action and transparency on the coronavirus, because, you know, at the time he was trying to butter up the Chinese president to get what Trump really wants, which is a trade deal that would reduce the U.S. trade deficit. But when that proved impossible, all Trump has done is just ratchet up the sanctions. And I suppose that's what we would expect for a second term. In the past year or so, the Trump administration has really amped up the rhetoric on China. Again, after Trump failed to squeeze this trade deal out of President Xi, and now, you know, there's just sort of relentless campaign by Trump and his top official, Secretary Pompeo, to denounce the Chinese Communist Party and really confront it. And it resonates because I think, you know, there's a bipartisan agreement that China is a problem, what it's doing domestically and in Hong Kong and vis-a-vis the Muslim residents in Xinjiang, and its threatening behavior in the South China Sea. So I think there's a bipartisan consensus on being tough on China. But I also think it's fair to say that the way Trump has defined dealing with it, at least so far, has not worked. These unilateral tariffs, which are the core of the Trump approach to China, have so far not produced a better trade deal or better Chinese trade practices, nor even reduced the U.S. trade deficit with China. But they've resulted in retaliatory tariffs from China on the U.S. that, contrary to what President Trump asserts repeatedly, are paid by American taxpayers, consumers, and importers. And, you know, we've actually had to tax the American taxpayer even more to bail out farmers who lost markets in China because of the Trump tariffs. You know, when you're looking for differences between the candidate, Vice President Biden has also underscored a desire to be tough on China, but he is proposing to do it together with our allies to have more leverage on China rather than unilaterally attacking both China and those allies at the same time.
Well, let's go to Joe Biden. You just laid out his China thoughts. Can we just sum it up by saying that he might reverse just about everything that Donald Trump has done? You know, rejoin the WHO, rejoin the Iran nuclear deal, the Paris Accord, kind of rejoin the world.
The world. Yes, rejoining and repairing is what Vice President Biden has sort of articulated as a theme of his foreign policy. And on those specific things that you mentioned, he's already addressed them and said immediately he would rejoin the Paris Climate Pact. On Iran, he said if Iran returns to full compliance with the deal, the United States would rejoin it as well and then look to launch negotiations on the future. He would rejoin the World Health Organization, which somehow Trump has decided was a good idea to pull out of during a pandemic. He would reiterate our commitment to NATO Article 5, as we were discussing earlier, the defense guarantee. And so that's already a big agenda, restoring some of the international relationships and partnerships and commitments that the United States had previously made that President Trump withdrew from.
What about Israel? The president has supported Prime Minister Netanyahu's push for settlement in the West Bank. He moved the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, something that outraged Palestinians and those hoping for a two-state solution, but won praise from evangelicals and parts of the Jewish community. Helped broker two peace agreements with two Gulf states. He thinks he should get the Nobel Peace Prize for this. But where would Joe Biden be different here?
Joe Biden would also be strongly supportive of Israel. He's made that clear for decades, and he said that his support for Israel would be unshakable. And he also supported the normalization agreements with the Gulf states. It was something that Democratic administrations had pursued for a long time. He said he wouldn't reverse the move of the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, although I think he and others and most Democrats would have liked to see it be part of an agreement with the Palestinians rather than unilaterally like President Trump did. But one thing that is different on that set of issues is Vice President Biden has also said that he would reverse Trump's approach towards the Palestinians, which has really just consisted of punishment for not going along with the so-called deal of the century that he proposed between Israel and the Palestinians. But he proposed a deal that essentially just aligned the United States with Israeli preferences and priorities. And the Palestinians, not surprisingly, rejected it. And Trump responded to that by cutting U.S. assistance to the Palestinians, by cutting U.S. assistance to the U.N. refugee agencies that help Palestinians, by closing the Palestinian representation in Washington. And Vice President Biden said that he would restore all of those efforts and policies and start talking to the Palestinians again and try to work towards this two-state solution.
We only have a little time here, so I just have to ask you very briefly, Russia. The president has refused to say anything critical of Putin, even as we know Russia's interfering again in our elections. What can we expect Joe Biden to do?
I think he would take a much harder line on Russia, both in terms of election interference, which is the most glaring thing that Trump has refused to address or even acknowledge. I mean, it's just an overt attack on our institutions. And I think Vice President Biden would take much tougher line on that. But also, as I said, NATO, defense of our allies in NATO, something that Trump, just for some odd reason that no one has been able to explain in 4 years, has been willing to do. I know we're running out of time. We've discussed most of the big issues, but I think we also have to underscore climate if we're thinking about issues where there's a difference between the two candidates, because in addition to rejoining world institutions, Vice President Biden has said that he would make dealing with the climate a priority and spend the money necessary to halt and slow climate change and rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement, whereas on the Trump side, it's something that he doesn't even acknowledge as a serious foreign policy issue. That's probably the most dramatic difference between the two.
You can't do climate without people from other countries. Philip Gordon, senior fellow in U.S. foreign policy at the Council on Foreign Relations, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And we note he served as an informal advisor to the Biden campaign.